podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host Ajit. In today's episode, we have at least one test we can discuss, and I'm very happy for that. And to help me unpack some relatively fallow international calendar and the burgeoning IPL, the beginning of the IPL, welcome to the podcast, Ramchandra.
Hey, hi Ajit, thanks for inviting, and nice to be here again.
Now, as always, it'll be a pleasure whenever you join us. Yeah. I've heard some good things about the weather in Bangalore. Anything to add?
This is sarcasm. This is the heights of sarcasm, Ajit. We are facing, like the other day, I think one of my friends had posted a screenshot of, you know, Chennai and Bengaluru temperature
right
at the same time. And apparently, Chennai was a degree or two cooler than Bengaluru at that point in time. So that's goes to show where has our city come to? If it doesn't rain in a month or so, it's going to be terrible.
Well, close more lakes and we'll see where we'll get to.
Yeah.
That's another discussion.
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, from where I am, considering it's still single digits here, so I would be very happy at 34,
lucky.
35, whatever. Well, lucky. Single digits. So, all right.
Yeah.
But
so other side.
Let's hope, you know, sort of balances out a little.
Yeah.
The international weather calendar has completely been thrown off whack last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Global warming or other things, we don't know. But let's hope it sort of stabilizes, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, from that, I think we should focus on what this podcast is all about. First, did you get a chance to see the Sri Lanka-Bangladesh test series?
I was following the scores on Cricbuzz, and yeah, quite a fascinating test match, and Bangladesh were literally trounced by Sri Lanka, and I mean, two batsmen getting twin centuries, how often are we seldom? Is this the first time? I'm not sure whether it is the first time it has happened in the history of Test cricket, where two batsmen get twin centuries in both the innings. It was Vanindu Mendis and Dhananjay De Silva.
Correct.
So that was something like I couldn't really process, like how, and both the batsmen batted in the middle order, like five, and probably Mendis came at seven in the second inning. So that's like unbelievable. And how often do we see something of that sort happening? So, of course, I mean, Bangladesh were never in the contest, and that one shot of Litton Das was discussed a lot and criticized a lot. And even I was wondering, what was he trying to do? He was not chasing 10 per over in a T20 match. And you do that in the first ball of a test match, you look silly, don't you? And there is every reason to be crucified when you play that kind of a shot. And rightfully, they lost the test match. And I can't understand how can Bangladesh be so kind of, they just gave up at home. You normally don't see a Bangladesh play the way they did. At home. I mean, at home, they are a force to reckon with. I mean, they gave a real scare to India last year when India were there. So, but this, margin is, it's going to hurt them. 300 plus, losing at home by 300 plus runs to Sri Lankan side. It's something, even if we had discussed this game before, no one would have said that, Bangladesh is going to lose that way they did. So, all the reason to be disappointed if you're a Bangladeshi fan.
Absolutely. So, a couple of things. I think it might be the first time in the history of cricket itself, you're right, that the same two batsmen have scored twin hundreds, right?
Yeah.
So, that's the first thing. And the second thing, I think the first time since the 80s, apparently, in any away tour where all 20 wickets in the opposition lineup fell to fast bowling of Sri Lanka, right? So, again, something very rare.
Yeah.
So, it shows the status of the pitch. So, I would say in this case, the blame, if any, lie squarely on the Bangladeshi batters. Look, first of all, it was a complete seesaw test, right? So, Sri Lanka were 55 for 5 or something, 57 for 5, right?
Yeah.
When Dinesh Chandimal got out in the first morning, and then you thought it could be the other way where Sri Lanka are bundled out for 150 and then they're chasing the game. But then these two get together, and yet they, 280 is not a big deal because they throw their wickets away in succession. And then 280 is, well, it's a good total. It's not a great total. But then Bangladesh never get going. They also fall to 5 for 83. But then they can't capitalize, right? So they don't have a similar sort of an innings or more gritty sort of innings in the lower order. And they only come to 188. And on such a pitch, a 90-plus run lead is quite damaging, right? So Vishwa Fernando, Kasun Rajitha and Lahiru Kumara do a wonderful job. And by the way, Kasun Rajitha takes 8-4 in the game and a 5-4 in the second innings. So wonderful bowling there. And again in the second innings, they are in a bit of trouble at 5 for 113. I'm talking of Sri Lanka where, well, you could say if they're bundled out for 180, there is still a game when they have 290 to chase or something. No, that won't happen again because the same two batters, mainly Dhananjay De Silva takes the real captain's knock from him and he rescues Sri Lanka first. And by the time, you know, Vishwa Fernando, the night watchman, is dismissed, Sri Lanka are already looking a little comfortable, 6 for 126. But then, you know, you have a couple of people who can bat. You know, Prabha Jayasurya can throw his bat. Kamindu Mendus is coming off 100. You're expecting 30s, 40s here. You're going to cross 300 run margin with the lead. And maybe you give yourself a chance. Dhananjay De Silva didn't look like getting out at all. Right?
Yes.
So, he plays along his merry way. And Kamindu Mendus, I think, wonderful, wonderful knock. I mean, he's a coming player, they say. If you remember, Kamindu Mendes became famous for being able to bowl off both his hands. I mean,
yes, ambidextrous. Yeah,
correct. He was ambidextrous spinner, right arm off break and left arm orthodox, right? So you think, wow, amazing. But then he's actually a full batter who can do some tricks.
Yeah, it's a proper batter. Yeah. So it reminds me of the latest Karnataka debutant, Dheeraj Gowda, who as the captain won the Cooch Vihar trophy recently. He's also an ambidextrous bowler. He bowls slow left arm and he bowls off spin with his right hand. And he's a proper batter who has got, 400 runs in the Cooch Vihar trophy. He's a genuine all-rounder. I mean, it's very difficult to master both arts. Spin bowling is a huge thing. So I'd rather have him concentrate on one of those skills, either off spin or a slow left arm. And bat the way he does. And I mean, it's a nice skill to have. It can you can bamboozle batters at times, but in the longer run, I don't think it's going to help you in any regard if you are playing at this level. So it is like surprising, every single time when I watch the quarterfinal game. I mean, if there's a left-hander, he was bowling off spin, and if there's a right-hander, he's bowling slow left arm, and each and every time he had to inform the umpire that, he's changing his card. So it was kind of a circus going on in the Ranji Trophy game. So that was quite funny. And never in my cricket viewing experience for these 20 years, never have I seen that kind of a thing. So it was cricket. I mean, it's evolving and new things are coming. So one of those such cricketers making it to the international level is a great thing. I mean, isn't it? I mean, he's gone that far. So good luck to him in his career, and getting two centuries in early parts of his career is a wonderful achievement.
Absolutely. And look, the way those runs were hit, I mean, very classy runs. I got the highlights. I couldn't watch it live. But towards the end, he exploded. Knowing that the tail was in hand, he batted perfectly. The way he batted would have made a Lakshman or a Hussey or somebody proud, right? Somebody who's a master of batting with the tail proud. And basically, those runs he put together with Prabhat Jayasurya and the tail put the game completely beyond Bangladesh. There was no hope. I mean, a lead of 500, right?
Yeah.
So when Dhananjay De Silva got out, the score was not at 300, Sri Lanka's. But he added 118 runs from there. If you're thinking, I'm going to try and chase 320, 330, you're already in trouble. But then to think that you have to chase 500 plus, the game is over. You're already lost. In your head, you've given up. And you saw that in your approach, right? So that is sort of quantified by what happened with Leighton Das. To advance at a bowler, the first ball, and try to throw the kitchen sink right in a test match. I mean, there are different ways people like to start, right? They say many batters are very nervous at the start. They like to get a run and then they feel settled. You've seen many people run suicidally first ball, but this is something else. Well, Mominul Haq played really well, by the way. He's he's one of the more promising players, but
promising,
somehow
yeah.
lost his way in the recent years. So good to see him sort of, at least I'm hoping, beginning a comeback. So Vishwa Fernando, 7 wickets, Kasun Rajitha, 8 wickets, and 5 wickets for Lahiru Kumara. So they basically completely drowned Bangladesh out there, the fast bowling. But you know what? I am thinking it will be a completely reversal in the second test, right?
Oh,
Bangladesh are capable of such efforts, right?
Yeah, with the spin attack, they can do wonders. I mean, they just need their batsmen to, you know, come to the fore. That's
correct.
It. Put some runs, 350, 400, and watch the fun.
You can see this is also the next generation of Bangladesh.
Yes.
There is no Mushfiqur Rahim. There is no Tamim Iqbal.
Yeah.
There is no Shakib Al Hasan.
There is no Shakib, yes.
Right? So that means, and no Mahmudullah. So all the big wigs, the sort of fab four of Bangladesh batting are no longer here. So there is some learning to be had. And probably they just discovered their own pitch to be too spicy. That can happen from time to time.
Yeah.
But let's see, right? If they can also get going and maybe make it a real impact. That's going to be interesting to see. So overall, a very entertaining test, something we were really looking forward to, given that, you know, there's so much of limited overs cricket going on everywhere. And before the test match, these same two teams played out a T20 series where very topsy-turvy series, because the first of the T20, the first of the ODIs. So in theory, it was the T20 series that was played first, but then the ODIs came. Because in the T20 series, Sri Lanka won the series. And in the ODI series, Bangladesh won the series. So in the ODI series, the first game, they won by 6 wickets, Bangladesh. It was a relatively comfortable win. But the second ODI, Sri Lanka came back, won very comfortably by, you know, three overs remaining, even though they lost some wickets at the end. And the last one was a one-sided game, I would think, because Bangladesh won comfortably. So topsy-turvy sort of a tournament, but Bangladesh sort of showing they are serious. I mean, they're a serious team when competing at home, and it's very tough to beat them, especially in that limited overs teams and limited overs games. They have that maturity, even without these big people, right? Even all the big names we mentioned.
Yeah.
In the limited overs, both Mushfiq and Mahmudullah play. So they bring that solidity right away. And you see, the longer the game, the more it matters that these top order players show up. And maybe from Sri Lankan perspective, they have a new captain as well, right? So if you are looking, they have Kusal Mendes leading in ODIs, Vanindu Hasaranga, and Dhananjay De Silva. So for me, it's always sort of, for Dhananjay De Silva, it's a fulfillment of a prophecy or a promise. But they're also sort of settling in, we can say, right? So thoughts on the ODI series?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising, you know. I did not expect, you know, the result, the way it went. But I mean, full match to the way both the teams played. And a 50-over series, a lot of people ask, what is the purpose now? You're playing a bilateral, which hardly attracts the eyeballs, and it's something, this format is dying. But I feel that, you know, if you regularly play a three ODI match, where, I mean, whichever team tours, make sure that you at least play three ODIs along with the T20s, just to keep that format going. So that is one thing which I'm really happy about, because off late you're seeing, you know, most of the teams, they just go and play three test matches and three T20s. So, or even 520 T20s for that matter. In that regard, I was happy to see 320, 350 over matches being played. And of course, I mean, for someone, you know, who grew up watching 50 over matches, I can never really say that, you know, I hate this format. It's something which was my cricket education started from watching 50 over matches in the 90s. So, I mean, if it is packaged in a way which makes more attractive for the modern day, 50 over cricket will survive. And you could see that the 50 over World Cup, people enjoyed this World Cup, to be honest. So, yeah, all the more reason to continue with this format. And you can tweak a bit to make it a little more interesting. And the fact that this T20, so many T20 series and leagues mushrooming all over. So probably that kind of people have got you to that pace. So to pull them back to 50 over matches, you need to feed them. And I mean, what better way to have a regular fixture, you know, whenever the team tours, have a 50 over matches regularly played.
Correct. See, the thing is, it's sort of a build up to a bigger test match series, right? So from that perspective, it's sort of still a good test. As long as the pitches remain a bit spicy, it doesn't become really a run fest. One dayers will remain very relevant. So something very interesting as well. If you are looking at the longer picture, maybe teams will debut people in ODIs.
Yeah.
You have a category of players who are sort of T20 specialists, but anybody who's interested in the long format will probably play ODIs and then sort of graduate to tests. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
And it remains to be seen if, you know, it'll retain its relevance, or if it'll eventually dwindle out only to a 4-year competition or something. We'll see if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Coming away from this ODI series, there was also another T20 series, Afghanistan and Ireland. So from that perspective, right? Rashid Khan came back. So that's a big news if you are a Afghanistan fan and sort of world cricket fan, right? He came back to lead Afghanistan and rightly they went back and won the series. So first of all, do you think Afghanistan could have done better without Rashid Khan? Because they have enough experienced players, right?
Yeah, I mean, they have like a lot of players of Afghanistan. They play regularly in the leagues. I mean, if you could see them, and they play all the leagues. Even most of, I mean, few players even play in the IPL. They're regulars in the IPL. So they've got the experience to play at this level. And you could see that this is one of those teams which has matured much quickly. And you, I mean, you can never take an Afghanistan side lightly, irrespective of the format. Probably in test matches, they still have a long, long way to go. But in the limited overs format, both the limited overs format I'm talking about, you can't take them lightly. They gave a real scare in the World Cup, didn't they? And I mean, they almost made it to the semifinals. A game here or there, result here or there, they could actually be in the top four. I mean, that Australian loss is going to hurt them. That, you know, Maxwell's mad innings cost them the slot in the semifinals. So they're that good. They're that good in the white ball format. So I just hope that, you know, they just marry consistency with their skills. And I mean, it's going to be one of the finest white ball sides, Sajid, with the kind of variety they have in the bowling, also in batting, especially in the spin department. And it's one of those, you know, sides you actually love to watch. They complete the whole spectrum, isn't it? You have spinners, this spinners, all spinners. Then you have those exotic batsmen who just come and throw the kitchen sink. I mean, you pay to watch these kind of players, don't you? So in that way, I'm a huge fan of Afghanistan cricket. Let me make it clear. I enjoy watching them play.
No, I can understand, of course. And look, at the end of the day, they have these impact players. And eventually, they may also gain that consistency. That is the most toughest thing, sort of. If you are a young team in international cricket, one of the toughest ones.
Yeah.
So now, they will probably look to marry that consistency and get a bit more consistent results. If not consistent, you know, scores and consistent bowling performances, sometimes it results in a win or not. So that's what probably they'll be looking at. Trott is doing an admirable job as the coach. And, you know, they have some leadership there, Nabi, Rashid, right? And they have some hitting, Rahmanullah Gurbaz, and a lot of other people, Asmatullah Umarzai, right? So a lot of big names there. So there is a chance they might be a serious contender come the T20 World Cup this summer. So something we are looking forward to as well. And you can see that the more the T20 has went on, the comfortable the team got. And it led in a trouncing towards the end where Ireland were bundled out for just 98. So what a comeback it was. Rashid Khan, a man of the series performance, 8 wickets in 33 runs. So you see how important he is, almost talismanic as far as this team is concerned.
Yeah. He is probably the most important player.
And sometimes I'm a little worried with the way Ireland are heading, because I don't think they get enough games and enough exposure. Their players don't play around in T20 leagues. So it's a real issue. And you see that sometimes that people like Andy Balbirnie are sort of regressing a little from real, really talented player, big runs.
He's
gone nowhere.
Yes. Yeah. So in 2011, they were like, their proper, you know, cricket side, you could see that they had beaten a couple of really good teams in that period. But I mean, they've gone nowhere from there. There's hardly any progress. And as you mentioned, they've fallen back to a certain extent. And look at how Afghanistan has advanced. In 2011, Afghanistan were nowhere close to where Ireland were at that point in time. But the difference between those two sides are like huge now. And then I mean, like whichever team towards England, you could see that, you know, they go to Ireland and play a couple of T20 matches. And apart from that, they don't get anything. And that's a serious concern. And I mean, like, with England being so close to them, I mean, you have to find a way so that they're involved more, and at least in the white ball formats. Of course, they got a test status also, but you hardly see them play test matches. It's just one test match a year, here and there. That two against in Afghanistan or Zimbabwe or even Bangladesh at certain point in time. So if your appearance at this level is sporadic, you're never going to improve. You got to play more and more cricket. As simple as that, Ajit.
Absolutely. I mean, that's also something their board will be concerned about. And in one
Yeah.
of the previous episodes, a guest Messi was covering that, you know, they had to turn down some series and they had to make adjustments
Yeah.
because they were not in a position. That's not a good sign, you know. That's the way Kenya went, and eventually we know where they are now. And,
Yes.
right? So we
We'll
don't
know
want to
well
see
enough,
Ireland
yeah.
cricket. Zimbabwe as well are sort of facing similar sort of a problem. We don't want to see
Yeah.
Ireland face such issues. So we wish all the best as far as Ireland cricket is concerned. And look, ICC can also step in. There's much to do. I'll not go deeper into
Yeah.
it, but maybe there is
Yeah.
something ICC can do as well. Let's see what is possible from there. I'm sure they're already keeping an eye on it. So
Yeah.
moving on, if we go one step further into the other sort of recently concluded tournament, so the first thing we would like to probably talk is the WPL. So
Yeah.
as an RCB fan, WPL won by an RCB team, finally a PL star PL pun.
Yeah,
Does it make you happy?
finally. Yeah, very much. And I watched that game with one of my friends who's also a cricket kind of a buff, and we enjoyed that game together. And the icing on the cake was Shreyanka Patil's performance with the ball. And though it
Absolutely.
was Milex who applied the brakes initially, she got 3 wickets initially. Shreyanka finished the job, and 112 was obviously gettable with Ellis Perry and Smriti Mandhana in your ranks. It was not going to be a problem. And they just did the chase, I mean, completed the chase with ease. And what a moment. And you could see, I mean, it was such a huge thing. And what was really fantastic is the local Bangalorians enjoying that victory. It was as if it was like a huge thing. I mean, you hardly see women's cricket fans, you know, going berserk and going all over and celebrating. But in Bengaluru, that thing is different. I mean, they whether it's an IPL game or a WPL game, it's still a trophy for RCB. That's what matters. And I mean, all over the social media, everywhere, there were people who were bursting crackers at 11, 11:30 in the night. I did imagine.
Absolutely.
And, the progress the women's cricket has made in the past decade and a half is unbelievable. Probably 15 years ago, if you had asked to name at least three or four women cricketers, apart from Mithali Raj and a few people, you would have Anjan Chopra, Julian Goswami, you would hardly, you know, had cricket fans even know their names. Now you have IPL, I mean, you have WPL, you have regular series for India. So, I mean, they've come a long, long way, and full marks to BCCI for making this happen. And just upwards and onward from here, Ajit. I think probably you will have 8 teams in the WPL going forward, and that's going to be even more competitive. And when you see someone like Shreyanka Patil coming through the ranks and the nonchalance in her bowling, that was unbelievable. You could see that pride, the control. She's a proper spinner. I wish we had a spinner of that sort in the males, Karnataka male team also, because we're struggling for a proper spinner from ages. You know, it's been a decade since Shreyas Gopal was never really a genuine spinner to speak. So that kind of a Sunil Joshi kind of a, you know, the proper spinner, we hardly have had a spinner of that quality from past decade and a half. So I wish we had someone like Shreyanka Patil in the men's team also. But really happy for her. I think she's going to achieve a lot of things if she you know, has that steady head on her shoulders, and if she doesn't get like carried away with the initial success, she's going to have a great career. And she's probably, I mean, going to end up as one of the finest Karnataka players ever.
Let's hope so. And, you know, you took
yeah.
a name earlier in the episode, Gowda, right? Harshit Gowda.
Yeah, Neeraj Gowda.
Dheeraj
yeah.
Gowda, sorry. Let's hope he
yeah.
gets to be the Shreyanka Patil of men's Karnataka cricket, right? He's also new.
Hey,
young.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
All right. So glad to hear, you know, they also changed the name to Bengaluru.
Yeah.
So Royal Challengers
yeah.
Bengaluru. It's
Bengaluru,
very jarring
yeah,
if you ask me, you know, Royal Challengers
yeah.
and then Bengaluru. But all right, it's what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, somehow,
yeah.
Bangalore, they're always made sense in my.
Yeah, well, when you speak, but that's by default, Ajit. You know, when you talk in Kannada, it becomes Bengaluru, and when you talk
exactly.
in English, by default, subconsciously, you spell Bengaluru. Unless you make an effort, I mean, you never say Bengaluru when you're talking in English. So that's something which is like ingrained in us right from our childhood growing up in the city. So,
absolutely.
I mean, it'll take some time. It'll take some time. Hopefully, like, yeah, this has been the official name. Since its inception. So it took a lot of time to make an official correction, but, better late than never.
Absolutely.
And
yeah. you can also be happy as, local fans of Bengaluru
yeah.
finally winning something and, a Kanadiga player doing well in the final and so on. So
yes.
let's hope our adapted players for the male team do well to win us a trophy as well.
Yes.
All right. So now from there to the other T20 tournament that finished in the interim, which is basically the PSL final. So Islamabad was sort
weekends,
of the favorite,
yeah.
right? They were sort of
Correct.
A team going into the final.
Yeah.
Multan Sultans were hot, but then towards the end of the tournament, they began to lose a little bit of steam. And you saw that also in the final, the way they began.
Yeah.
Usman Khan was the only one that really made any difference.
Difference, yes. Correct.
Because they could not really go a whole lot above 7 runs and over. I think very comfortable and clever bowling. So Shadab Khan may have finished with 3 for 32, but he looked very clever while bowling and he was sort of doing very well. But then the star of the show was Imad Wasim, who took a 5-4 in the final, right? And they have the Shah brothers, Naseem and Hunain Shah.
Yeah, it's great to see Naseem Shah
back.
Runs. Yeah, I mean, I was happy to see Naseem Shah. Yeah, he's one of
wonderful
those...
to see that long hair. You know, that
Correct.
Typical Pakistani fast bowling hair, the very important part.
Shoaib Akhtar.
Right, and then,
yeah,
exactly, that amazing locks sort of flowing behind him as he runs in. And then, of course, his brother Hunain Shah. Lovely to see all that. What I'm leading towards is that the both brothers made important contributions. Naseem Shah hit out towards the end in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, that was a
right?
crucial
then,
in the context of the game.
Correct?
Like 8 balls, 17, that was a very crucial. Yeah.
So then he gets out, but then on the last ball, his brother has the presence of mind to just dink it into the empty part of the ground. But then it goes for 4, that's fine.
Yeah.
Right? That was fantastic to see. So when you see all this, it's quite something that Pakistan are looking more and more sort of well-grooved going into an important T20 World Cup year. And it's good to see that there is some news like this. And, you know, a couple of these players, I think, are being persuaded to come back into the fold. One of them being Imad Wasim, because I think he was sort of unfulfilled, we felt, when his career, he sort of declared over. But then if he's coming back, it's good to see.
Some
right? And then at that time, having some reservations.
Yeah.
The tantrum he threw when he sort of walked out was not very becoming of a player. Let me first of all qualify by saying this is a personal opinion, right? But the tantrum we saw when he sort of walked away was, it seemed like a tantrum. That's why I'm using that word. It did not seem like a disgruntled player. It did not seem very decorous. But then his talent is always undeniable. We know this. So they have decided to sort of try to give him another chance, maybe to prove himself. It's not like he's going to be a definite starter or he's going to be in the squad, but at least there's a chance now that he can get there, right? So that is very interesting to see if it materializes.
Yeah, he's always been the problem child, isn't he? Like, right from his like teens, despite the kind of talent he has, he's caused more damage to Pakistan than he has helped with them win matches. So that's unpardonable. And
it's a tough thing, yes.
It's one simple, yes. Just can't help.
Let's see how it goes. And
let's
see if, you know, he's able to, in his second coming, let's hope he's still 31. And let's see if he can put all of that behind him and come front and put a good performance again. Remember, he did win them a Champions Trophy at some point in time.
Yeah.
So in the final, at least, he did really well.
Yeah.
Right? He can maybe come back and do that again as far as Pakistan are concerned. So good luck to both these players coming back. And as I said, Islamabad United are sort of shaping up to be the Mumbai Indians / Chennai Super Kings of the PSL. So that's nice to see if you're a fan of PSL. So yeah, great great performance there and congratulations to them. Now moving on, some out of the field news and some interesting ones. So what is all this kerfuffle with Hasaranga coming back, sort of unretiring and then immediately being banned for 2 games? What's going on? Do you know more about this?
Look at the timing, Ajit. He comes back after the year. He makes himself available for the test matches. And he finds himself guilty of breaching an ICC code of conduct. And he's not allowed to participate in this test match. I mean, like, what can you say? Look at that timing. And it's disappointing because he's someone who hasn't had a great test career until now. Though it's like early stages as far as test career is concerned, but I think Sri Lanka have a lot of quality spinners. Prabhat Jayasurya is there, and Zambuldini also in the rank still. So, I mean, they have got quality spinners there. But Hasaranga is someone who's probably different in that kind of Ajanta and this kind of a mold kind of a bowler who's who's not a genuine, a traditional spinner, but someone who has a bag of tricks and he's also handy with the bat. So, I mean, any team would like to have a bowler like a player like Kasaranga. I'm not sure whether he's allowed to play in the second test match. Probably he's what?
No, I think he's going to miss the series.
Oh, yeah. Then I think, it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. Yeah.
Well, let's see if, there was some talk of maybe it was very cleverly timed.
Yeah.
His return so that the moment he came back, he would be banned. So it's almost like you can start from the next series.
Yeah.
So there was some consternation from people overall where they said this is like a trick that has been played by the Sri Lankan board.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful of ICC and so on. Maybe they're reading too much into it. I don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a little bit of well-timed gamesmanship. Let's call it like that.
Yeah.
But it remains to be seen if, him also in his second coming as a test player, he's able to make some good impact as far as Sri Lanka are concerned, right, in tests, because he's one of those go-getter players, the way I look at it, right, frankly.
Yeah.
He's somebody who can make things happen. In test matches, it's probably also something he has to build, that sort of resilience, that sort of bowling consistently over a period of time. It doesn't come immediately for everybody.
Yeah.
So you have to build up to it, right? So that's something he has to build as well. So let's see if he'll get there.
Yeah.
And now, we see a bunch of players making a comeback overall, and maybe there is something to be had there. This is one player who's making a comeback to the test match fold. The others are just making a comeback, and especially people like Imad Wasim only for the World Cup, they said. But this guy, it's always for me a heartening thing to see a leg break bowler come back. Let's see if he's able to stick on and make a impact, as we discussed.
Yeah.
Now, going on, again, Cricket Australia seems to be unhappy about the inner ongoings of Afghanistan. They've postponed another T20 series that was supposed to happen this summer, late summer. Thoughts?
It's really unfortunate. Like, this is the second time they're doing this, and like they find some reasons, don't they? They just don't want to play Afghanistan. Last time it was they don't entertain women's cricket in Afghanistan, so we don't play with them. And now they have another reason to not play there. So if this continues, international tours are going to be really difficult for the, I wouldn't call them second string sides, but the teams which are like lesser fancied sides. So if all the top player teams are not going to play them, how are they going to improve? So it's like the crisis what Sri Lanka faced in the late 80s and the early 90s. Before winning the World Cup, Sri Lanka hardly played any test matches. And probably because of the issues we had with the NTT and other teams, they hardly played test matches at home. So Afghanistan are in the same boat now. No one can go to Afghanistan. Their home is Lucknow. And they don't play there. They don't organize any matches over there. So they need to travel. So it's only other, India played 5 T20s recently. So then what? You hardly see any top teams inviting them. So it was probably magnanimity of India which allowed that series to happen. So apart from that, you don't see any other teams making a tour. Inviting Afghanistan.
I look at it the other way, right?
Yeah.
So it comes across as a little bit double standard because the cricketing body is allowing cricket to happen in Afghanistan, whereas a single board is sort of making their own decisions and sort of having some specific standards, let me put it like that.
Double standards.
That doesn't come across well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the ICC should be in a position to say you can't do this.
Yeah, again and again.
Or
yeah.
Say you're going to lose the points.
Yeah.
If you want to continue postponing it, you're going to lose the points to Australia. So can ICC step in? That's something I would like to look at. Because otherwise, you recognize Afghanistan Cricket Board as a body, a fully functional body. And then the human rights issues, what they are being internal problems of any country.
Yeah.
It's a very tough thing to sort of internationalize it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's by the by. But you can see this happening like time and again. And it's again, once more, we see the same sort of problems coming. I think, look, my only worry is countries and cultures have generational memories.
Correct.
And what happened at some point in time is never easily forgiven if it was considered a slight. And that's carried on and people tend to remember them and then hold a grudge over generations. And then I dare say the current, the big three issue happened because of treatment meted out to certain South Asian countries in the 70s and 80s.
Absolutely. Bang on.
That is even now remembered.
Of course. I mean,
yeah. And
look,
you are worried the same thing may happen. You know, Mark Twain once said history doesn't repeat itself. He said history rhymes with itself.
Look, India was a tour. India hardly was invited in the 90s for test matches. If you remember, after 91, 92, India was invited to Australia after 8 long years in 1999, 2000. So for 8 years, India did not travel to Australia. And England, after 1990, India made another cut in 1996, then again in 2002. Now you see every alternate year, India traveling to either UK or Australia. So that's kind of you can see the example there in just a matter of 10 years. Of course, the quality of Indian cricket has improved, or also the IPL has helped with all that. You know, India has a lot to offer now, and India fills the coffers wherever they go. So India is kind of a hot cake now. You know, everyone wants India to you know, visit their country and play cricket there. So, but you know, this is the kind of scenario what India and Sri Lanka also faced when Pakistan were a fine side in the late 80s and early 90s. Pakistan used to regularly travel to West Indies, Australia or England, whereas India were hardly played any test matches overseas in the 90s. So that's a difference, you know. But look, you can't do this again and again, as you said. I mean, this is not the first time they're doing it. And if I remember, 2003 was the last time Bangladesh flew to Australia for a test match series. Yeah, it was once penultimate series, if I'm not wrong. Or probably before that, yeah, 2003. So it's been 21 years. Bangladesh have not toured Australia for a test match series. How is that? Like 21 years. And it's not that Bangladesh haven't improved.
Right.
In the past 2 decades, they've improved a lot. They've toured India twice. And I mean, even probably South Africa also did not tour much. But I mean, if they're not allowed to play, how are they going to improve? At least squeeze out a 2 test match series regularly, at least 5 years once. That should be near of the hour. And it's not the old Bangladesh side, which would be, you know, which folds up in 2 days. These guys are going to fight. These guys want to put up a fight. So make sure that, you know, they're invited and they're hosted.
Absolutely. As I said, some history may repeat itself if we don't learn lessons from what happened earlier. I mean, let's hope the people who are looking at these things are also aware. Yeah. I'm sure they are, but they can make an impact. They can make a change that will, you know, prevent these sort of mistakes from being made again and again. Yeah. All right. From that one, we go on to the other white elephant in the room, or whatever colored elephant you may call it, the IPL that's currently ongoing.
Yeah.
So happy with the way RCB started. Let's start there.
Yeah, RCB have been at home. It's perfect. And what was really heartening to see was Virat Kohli's approach. And he never let the guard down. And he was striking at 150 right from the word go. Of course, he was lucky to be dropped Ali when he was on in, you know, what probably was on not when he was dropped.
Yeah.
So, and he made a full use of it. And look, I mean, the few shots he played were breathtaking. And despite that innings of his, RCB could have still lost the game, but it was, you know, full marks to Mahipal Lambro and Dinesh Karthik for the way they pulled off in the end. And I've seen RCB lose innumerable matches from that scenario where a set batsman gets out and they had 11 or 12 runs to get in and over for the last 4 or 5 overs, and they lost more often than they've won. So, but this was one of those games where, you know, of course they're helped by some kind of wayward kind of a bowling from Punjab. I mean, Sam Curran and I think Harshal Patel bowled a few freebies initially when they were early. Both Dinesh Karthik and Lambro, when they were batting or not, when they were early in the innings, they got a few leg stump off volleys, they got full tosses, and that helped. Once they got the momentum, I think they just belted them to all corners of Chinnaswamy. And nice, it was nice to see Bengaluru starting with 2 points. And perfect way to start at home. And the next 2 games are also at home, so that should help.
Fair enough. But from a very early standpoint, right? I mean, it's hardly, you know, 8-9 games.
Yeah, you
but
can't.
Even from this perspective,
you can't draw any conclusions from it. It's just one game. It's still early stages. Unless, you know, you have a decent sample size of 5 or 6 games. You know, it's kind of a jigsaw puzzle. RCB still have to figure out who their proper spinner is and what their seam attack is going to be. And there's still there are a few weaklings available, I mean, present even now, but I mean, going forward, they need to work on that, because I this spin attack doesn't really seem promising, Ajit, to be very honest. I think first they let go of Chahal, they got Hasaranga, then they released Hasaranga after a couple of seasons, right. And you don't have a proper spin. I mean, Mayank Daggar has been doing well. He's still, it was only second game, but there's no experience. If you had at least retained Hasaranga, it would have made some sense, and you let go of him, and you let go of someone like Chahal, a champion spinner who probably never had a lean season for you for 7 years. And yeah, the think tank has a lot to answer.
Well, they have some thought process, and they're backed by the management. Let's see if you know they can come good.
Yeah.
For this season, it's going to be tough, but maybe they'll get there.
Yeah.
And the first step would be to qualify, right, for the qualifiers, and then go from there or finish in the top two.
Correct.
Right. So let's see where that goes. But from this early stage, what do you think from purely setup perspective and how the teams are shaping up? I know it's hardly one or two games, but... from what they've shown, the attitude and other things, would you be comfortable picking your top two teams at this point in time?
Well, from what I've seen, I felt Rajasthan has got all their bases covered, like a quality side. There's hardly any weak link there. A team that has Chahal and Ravi Ashwin playing in India has to do well. As simple as that. Two quality spinners in this format. And then Gujarat Titans, despite Hardik Pandya's loss, probably they know how to win T20 matches, Ajit. Let me put it this way. Because when you look at the team sheet, when you look at their names on the paper, it doesn't really sound you don't feel intimidating playing them, but they find ways to win games. And they have a fantastic record. Two seasons, they were two top seasons. One, they ended up winning. Other one, they ended up being runners-up. So still, it's Ashish Nara at the helm of affairs, and Shubman Gill is the new captain. And they've got a lot of promising youngsters. Sai Sudarshan, and there is Abhinav Manohar, and Karnataka's keeper, Sharad Veer, has been, I think he was drafted in as a replacement for one of the Indian keepers. So he also probably could be.
Robin
Yeah,
means,
yeah. He also could get a game. But they've got a lot of youngsters, quality youngsters there. And also the seam attack is pretty decent. Pitumesh Yadav, with the kind of experience he brings in. And also they have...
Well, he won a game.
Yeah,
for
he won a game. And,
in the last
And
hours.
They have Rashid Khan. And he's like a bank.
Right.
What else do you know? And let me see. I mean, I'm all excited to see how Shubman Gill captains his side. And he's not really someone who's captained at any level. Probably he's not captain Punjab also. So, Prithvi Shaw was the captain of under-19 side of that batch. So, excited to see Shubman Gill's captaincy.
All right. A lot of things to look forward to. And, of course, the two classic teams who usually start slow.
Yeah, correct.
Chennai and Mumbai. Yeah. To see if they can come up with the goods. You have a good chance for the new teams, the teams that have the Lucknow Super Giants, and the Pune team. We'll see if they are able to mount a real challenge as well. But let's see if that remains to be seen. Now it looks like, at least in today's game, where Chennai are taking on Gujarat Titans.
Yeah.
I called them the Pune team. Apologies. Gujarat Titans. So in this case, so what remains to be seen is one of them will now today lose.
Yeah.
And it looks more and more like it's going to be the Gujarat team. But Chennai will go on top of the table. But then this team, we can now show what they're made of if they can bounce back.
Correct.
And so on. All right. Those were, all the topics we had in store for today's episode. I would like to say thank you once again.
Yeah, thanks, Ajit. Pleasure.
Chandra, for giving me your time.
Perfect.
No worries. And from in this case, anything to plug from your perspective? Anything?
Yeah, nothing. Like just going on busy with work, and hopefully after the IPL, we'll just waiting for test matches to start. That's it. English summer, batting English summer, and that's a cricket. Which I like.
You have a few months.
Yeah, a couple of months, and it's IPL also. I do watch IPL. It's kind of a nice thing, right? For side 2 months, you have. Cricket matches happening every day in the evening, and you can chill and relax, and it's for everything. IPL is pure entertainment. It's a great thing to happen for Indian cricket. In most of the things, I mean, there are few naysayers who say a lot of negative things, but it's helped Indian cricket. Let me put it this way. IPL is a boon, to be very honest. It's improved the domestic you know, cricketers' lives also, and the money, kind of money flowing game
Absolutely.
That's been invested in women's cricket. So it's a golden goose, and you just got to be kind of, you know, mindful of the way it's heading towards, and you got to control them, and that's as simple as that. And it's going to get only bigger and better from here, Rajiv. So yeah, all the more reason to be excited as an Indian and a cricket fan.
Perfect. Yeah. Great to hear.
Yes.
And okay. From you know, from a weather perspective, we hope it sort of settles.
True.
And you are able to enjoy the summer.
Yeah, proper Bengaluru summer is
all right.
They're like showers Perfect. In the evening. That's what
exactly.
As a kid from the 90s, we were accustomed to, you know, like scorching kind of a, I mean, scorching summer in the sense like 32, 30 degrees in the noon, and it rained. It used to rain in the evening. 4:35, and we should have showers at least once or twice a week, if I'm not wrong. So it was to never go to that 37, 38 kind of a degree kind of a mark. So, but things have changed, global warming and the population, the pollution, you know, you've had lots of trees for metro. So these things are about to happen. You're basically meddling with the, you know, ecosystem. So these things are about to happen. Let's see whether we can find a way out of this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. Thanks a lot. And we hope to have your company in the coming episodes as well.
Thanks
a lot, Ram. And
yeah.
Take care.
Yeah, thank you.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Podcast Network.